This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Taking his case on the road.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. President Obama today is off to a town hit hard by the economic fallout. He'll be there trying to rally support for his massive stimulus plan, which has been languishing of late in the U.S. Senate. A vote there is expected soon. And Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joins us now to talk about this trip. Jeremy, where's everyone headed today?
Well, Steve, they're going to Elkhart, Indiana, the Washington of the West, at least for today. The president is going there to sell his stimulus plan directly to the American people. A little bit about Elkhart. It has a much higher unemployment rate than the rest of the U.S. The mayor there saying it could be as high as 20%. The president's going to arrive there for a town hall meeting at noon. The tickets, I'm told, sold out in about an hour on Saturday. Tomorrow, the president is going to Fort Myers, Florida, which is one of the home foreclosure capitals of the country. And, of course, all of this is to build support and show those politicians in Washington what he's able to do with his bully pulpit in terms of getting this stimulus passed.
So we have stimulus package before the Senate, of course. Where does it stand right now there?
Well, there's going to be a key vote on the Senate version tonight. Now, that Senate version is pretty close at this point to the House version, about $827 billion. And it looks like, with three Republicans signing on, that it will be able to pass the Senate, the key vote this afternoon, and then the final vote on the Senate package tomorrow.
Jeremy, if I'm not mistaken, we were supposed to hear about the bank bailout, the second half of those TARP funds from Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. What happened with all of that?
Well, it's difficult to focus on more than one multi-hundred-billion-dollar plan at one time, and so that has been delayed so that the focus can remain on the stimulus package. That announcement by Mr. Geithner has been put off until tomorrow. The word is that there will be more capital injections into banks and no final word on the idea of that bad bank that would take on the troubled assets, but we'll find out tomorrow at 11 o'clock.
Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joining us from New York. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Investors not so happy with all the delays. Markets here stateside down. The Dow down about 0.5% so far this morning. The Nasdaq about 0.33%. Today in London, the FTSE's up. Barclays Bank reported a smaller-than-expected drop in profits. That's boosting numbers there just a bit, up slightly. Frankfurt and Paris up slightly as well. Hong Kong shares closed up. The Nikkei finished lower. Nissan will likely end its fiscal year in the red, the first time in nearly a decade. It's also cutting 20,000 jobs. One of its biggest plants is in Britain, which has already felt some pain. From London, here's Stephen Beard.
Nissan's chief executive did not mince words. He said the global auto industry is in turmoil, and Nissan is no exception. Last month, the company's sales fell by a third in the U.S., its biggest market. Nissan is likely to lose almost $3 billion in the current financial year. Most of the major car makers have laid off workers, but Nissan's cut of more than 8% of its workforce is among the deepest so far. Ian King of the London Times.
Nissan has a huge exposure to what you might call high-cost regions, such as Japan, the USA and Europe. And indeed, those regions look like they're going to probably bear the brunt of these reductions.
Nissan has yet to say which of its factories will be the worst affected. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, February 9th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Bankers will be in the hot seat later this week. Executives have been called to testify at a congressional hearing on Wednesday on what exactly they did with the money from the $700 billion bailout fund, known as the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
Congress didn't attach many strings to the first half of the TARP money. Banks aren't required to say how they spent it. Trying to figure it out is like nailing Jell-O to the wall. Even Elizabeth Warren has to guess, and she chairs a congressional oversight panel on TARP.
Some of the money went into buying other banks. Some of the money could have been used for buying assets in foreign countries, and it appears that some large portion of the money just was stuffed into bank vaults.
Warren says banks may have lent out some of the TARP money, but it's hard to say because no one kept track of the cash. But Scott Talbot says that's impossible. He's the chief lobbyist for the Financial Services Roundtable.
Just as a husband and wife put their paychecks into a checking account, can you track which paycheck dollar actually was used to pay the electric bill?
That's what bank executives will tell Congress. And Talbot says the execs will also emphasize that without the TARP money, lending would have gone into a free fall. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Do greener and more socially responsible companies outperform their peers? That's what a new study out today seems to suggest from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk. Sarah Gardner reports.
The global consulting firm A.T. Kearney admits it's the first time they've done this sort of comparison, so they're not prepared to make any grand conclusions. But here's what they found. They looked at 99 companies listed on sustainability stock indices. In this case, sustainability includes everything from corporate energy conservation to community work. Then they compared those companies' stock market performances with their industry peers.
We found over the six-month period that sustainable companies, in terms of stock price, outperformed their peers that are considered less sustainable by about 15%.
Outperformers included Toyota, BASF, and Walt Disney, among others. A.T. Kearney's Michael Wise theorizes that more sustainable companies are successful because they focus on long-term strategy rather than short-term profits and have strong programs to manage risk. Well, maybe most of them. Struggling Citigroup was among the 11 banks deemed sustainable. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
First, there was the book, then books on tape. Now there are electronic readers, such as the Kindle from Amazon. The company's expected to announce today that the Kindle is getting a design upgrade. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
The Kindle looks like a little electronic notebook. The display reads like real paper, no links or cables to weigh you down. A sleeker and less expensive Kindle reader could be unveiled today. But Amazon doesn't seem to be banking its future on the new design. Late last week, it said it would also offer its electronic books on cell phones. That could make its Kindle reader unnecessary. But University of North Carolina professor Paul Jones isn't sure books on phones will sell.
The question that you have to ask is, how much reading do you want to do on your phone, or do you need a separate device to do that reading? That's really about to be answered in the marketplace.
Last Thursday, Google made titles from its book service available on the iPhone and on Google's Android phones. The group that wins in this competition? Book publishers. They still make money off their titles without the expense of printing them. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
I guess it really is a dog's life after all. We all know the recession has most retailers on life support, unless you happen to sell pet products. Last year, while other industries faltered, the U.S. pet industry grew an estimated 5%, ringing up sales of $43 billion. And it's more than just leashes and water bowls. James Nestor reports from San Francisco on one of the more unusual products for your pooch.
Mitchell Berg is stacking dog perfumes onto cramped shelves at Bow Wow Meow. The manager of this upscale pet store says people find these products useful.
Especially if they sleep with their dog and what have you.
I brought in my 3-year-old rescue mutt, Face, to try out some perfumes.
You know, you've got Harry Barker, citrus fragrance, floral fragrance. You've got Earth Bath, which is a locally made product. And not only does he have numerous fragrances, but he also has wipes.
Steak.
I sprayed Face with Harry Barker. She tried to twist out of her collar to avoid it. But Burke says this stuff is flying off the shelves, so much so that in 2007, Liz Claiborne's Juicy Couture released Dog Parfum, a unisex fragrance sold at major department stores. Other makers followed.
Sexy Beast is 100% hypoallergenic, 100% vegan,
fragrance for your dog. It's really beautiful. I mean, we wear it, so we love it.
That's Beth Ehrenberg, brand manager for Sexy Beast. But Rachel Fagenbaum, a San Francisco vet, argues that some perfumes can be irritating, possibly toxic, and could disorient a dog's fine sense of smell.
A dog's aesthetic when it comes to smells is very different from a human aesthetic.
Some dog perfume makers think organics are the answer. George, a San Francisco pet boutique, offers fragrances with chamomile and tea tree oil. Manager Deborah Lowe's.
These ones, this is a really cute line. This is from Lonnie, and they base their scents on places that dogs, that will be familiar to dogs. So we only carry beach and park. You gonna try that one?
Oh.
Face freaked out and cowered in a corner. I told Deborah, no, I think we'll head for the real beach.
Face, come here.
In San Francisco, this is James Nestor for Marketplace.
Quite a few federal investigations that show where the government's concerned, the little guy just can't seem to catch a break. Federal money earmarked for small business seems to wind its way to big business instead. To fix that, those little guys are looking for some changes, Ronnie Radbill reports.
Small business advocates say the government's giant bailout does nothing to address contracting fraud and abuse. The government is legally required to award 23% of its contracts to small companies. Those are defined as independently owned and operated firms with up to 500 employees. Lloyd Chapman is president of the American Small Business League. He says instead, most of the business goes to the big guys.
You can imagine what happens when you pull $100 billion a year out of the middle class economy, where all the jobs are created, where most Americans work, and divert that money to Fortune 500 corporations that are shipping jobs overseas.
In one investigation, the Interior Department's Inspector General discovered small business contracts were finding their way to companies like Xerox, Dell, and Lockheed. In other cases, big corporations bought small firms and then kept their contracts. Dan Fahey owns a small IT consulting company in Rockville, Maryland.
He who has the power has the ability to get it. And what happens is that it's one of those things that's hard to prove, but you see it happening in front of you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
The corporations say they never intentionally diverted work from small companies. The U.S. Small Business Administration is responsible for the accuracy of the contracts. A spokeswoman there says sometimes errors in contracts are overlooked, but she says the agency is fixing the problem. Congressman Lynn Westmoreland is a small businessman from Georgia. He sits on the House Small Business Committee. Westmoreland says Congress needs to take a closer look at how the government prepares its contracts.
Sometimes they put together a contract that's so large that a small business can't do it.
He says SBA oversight, together with loosening up tight credit, are critical to small businesses.
I've got small businesses that are going bankrupt every day. Until we get the credit down to those small business guys and somebody's hometown, I don't think the economy's going to ever straighten out.
Small business owners echo that sentiment. They caution if it's business as usual in Washington, more jobs will be lost and small companies will continue to fail. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
Once again, stocks have started off the day lower. You can share your thoughts with us, check our podcast online, and starting today, catch our new online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, inside Marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do
the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.